Can any of you bring to mind any favorite sayings or proverbs or anecdotes that you had growing up that taught you some wisdom of life? Hello, welcome to Good Word. I'm Dave Thomas, your host for this quarter. We are talking about families. In particular, this week we are talking about wise words for families. I'm happy to have Jen Ogden and Brant Berglund with me, two colleagues who have been we've been together for some weeks now thinking about this. And I want to start here, Jen and Brant, by asking you if maybe in your growing up years you had any of these pithy, wise sayings that may have come your way that taught you some kind of life truth. Let's hear some. You got any?
Oh, yeah. My mom always used to say, just because there's a mouse in the cookie jar doesn't make him a cookie.
Which being interpreted would be?
Mice aren't cookies.
Oh, mice aren't cookies?
No. Okay. Literal meaning, mice aren't cookies.
Okay, well,
idiomatic meaning.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, idiomatic.
Idiomatic meaning is things aren't always what they pretend to be.
My father had one that we used to laugh at, that we'd get into all kinds of discussions, and sometimes my father would say, "Now, boys, remember, if somebody thinks you're a fool, don't open your mouth and remove all cause for doubt."
Yeah, that was the one that was the only one that I could think of as well that my dad used to say.
I have another one that I learned, and my wife likes this one a lot, is that there are two kinds of people in the world: those who do the work and those who get the credit. And then it has a trailer: try to be in the first group, there's a lot less competition.
True words.
Those who do the work, see. And there's another one. There are three kinds of people in the world: those who watch things, those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who wonder what on earth happened. You know? But anyway, the lesson today invites us to look at some of the proverbs that are attributed to King Solomon. They range over all kinds of subjects. I was in high school when I learned one of the Proverbs. I think it's Proverbs 17:10. This was a school where corporal punishment, the cane, was allowed. And the principal would remind us that in the book of Proverbs it says, "A word enters more into the mind of a wise man than 100 stripes into a fool." So he would use that to deter our behaviors. But some wise sayings out of the song, out of Proverbs, and one of them that is mentioned in the lesson is on marital fidelity. And here we run into the fact that the wise man reflects on the dangers and after effects of illicit relationships, especially sexual ones. I think everybody admits that sexual interest can be pretty strong in human experience, and the biblical ideal is for it to be experienced within the bounds of commitment and marriage, where love and commitment provide security and a sense of safety. And beyond the capacity to produce offspring, and this is not really a sex talk today, but I do think that we need to realize that human sexuality has two functions. One is to bond two humans together, and the other is to produce children. And if you don't mind yourself, you will have children. and so the wisdom of Solomon here, or the Proverbs, I think, is wise. You think of the social carnage that comes along, I think, because of the failure to be respectful of human sexuality. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have any comments you want to make on that. It's a subject of a subject.
Yeah, when we think about the way Proverbs begins, it begins with kind of caricaturing or anthropomorphizing wisdom and saying wisdom is like a good spouse that you take and she lives with you faithfully. But then there's the seductress, and that's foolishness. And so sexual experience and foolishness or wisdom are tied together throughout the first half. And I think it bears on the end of Proverbs as well when it talks about the ideal woman, the ideal wife. This is what a wise person does, not just what a wife does. This is an ideal wife. Person, but throughout the Proverbs, it's like, wow, if you make a mess of your life sexually, you can make a mess of a lot. It matters.
And of course, in our day and age, one of the things that comes with being promiscuous is the prospect of some diseases that will never go away. But to move on to another thing, there's good advice in Proverbs to fathers, and as a father, I'm very interested in that, because I think we know that fathers play a very significant role, and Jen, you deal with families.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're aware that there's evidence that the absence of a father may be more damaging than the absence of a mother.
In some ways,
yeah.
Well, I think especially on the spiritual impact, some of the most recent research that's coming out is saying that if a father, a whole family, a mother and father attend church with their children, the children are likely to stay with a spiritual journey 77% of the time once they're out of the home. If just the dad stays, 55% of those children will stay in some sort of spiritual community. If it's just the mom, it drops down to 15%.
Really?
So the impact a father has on his children's spiritual health is enormous. And I don't think we talk about it often in the sense of faithfulness and confidence in who God is as a man or as a woman.
Yeah.
I don't think we talk about that. Yeah. I mean, just as I don't think in maybe a lot of religious contexts, we talk about healthy sexuality. We may mention consent, and that's probably about as far as we go in very fundamental conservative circles if we get beyond the biology of it.
Yeah.
But we're talking about fidelity, I think we also need to talk about spiritual fidelity, in that my relationship with God has a massive impact on the future spiritual relationship of my family.
And I think also fathers help provide a great sense of security and modeling. And, you know, traditionally fathers were the disciplinarians, which I don't think was necessarily a good one. I've known of children whose mother said, you wait till your father gets home, he'll deal with this, you know.
Oh, yeah, that was me. I would, if I did something wrong at school, and I was kind of ADD, and I would act up at school, and I would get sometimes reprimanded at school, then I'd come home and get a reprimand from my mom, and then my dad would come home, and, you know, he had a nice leather belt that I felt some once in a while. I always knew it was for the right reasons. I never felt like it was abuse. It was
I deserve
guidance.
It.
Yeah, I knew it. Yeah, I had dishonored my family.
Pay your fine.
Yeah.
I remember the last time my dad was ever supposed to spank me. He had his lovely little leather belt, and the time before he'd hit me with a buckle on accident.
Ooh.
And he'd left a bruise, and I think he felt really guilty.
Yeah.
But my mom said, you wait until your dad gets home. And when dad came home, I got the belt, but he was I think terrified that he would hurt me again.
Yeah.
And so he actually hit the leather couch, the arm of the leather couch, and he's like, scream.
Pretend you're getting
spanked. Yeah, exactly. Pretend it's a good spanking.
Then you knew the game was over.
Then I knew it was over, and there was no more spankings from my dad anymore. But I think that him realizing that he had gone too far, and that ability to be able to monitor himself was really important.
Yeah,
and as a dad, that for me, to see that from my father was really important, to realize, like, he knows.
Yeah.
He's human.
This is
he can make mistakes.
Right.
I also like the little piece that was mentioned here, that one of the best things a father can do for his children is love their mother consistently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And openly, mm-hmm. not just, you know, but the children
to say it, to show it.
Yeah,
yep.
Sure. What about the matter of discipline? You know, you brought that up, Jen, I think. Mm. Or maybe it was Brent who brought it up. Yeah. And I liked the point that was made that discipline should never be done in anger. Because it's not discipline anymore, it's venting or frustration. And the other one is, it should always be done with a view to the future effect.
Mm.
You know, why are you punishing a child? And should you, you know, I wonder about punishment as some additional penalty for doing wrong, you know, above natural consequence. You know, natural consequence, I think, for the most part, children should not be shielded from that unless it's going to be very destructive. But, you know, if you steal something, you should have to face the music.
Mm-hmm.
If you did something dumb, you should have to face the music. That's how you learn the connection mm-hmm. between choice and consequence. But
well, I think we could model consequence really well for our children. And that would be a beautiful thing. I think in Western society, we resort to yelling or spanking.
Yelling is very effective, though.
Right. Well, it's effective in the second.
It's very insulting.
In the moment.
It's insulting, actually.
Right. It doesn't have long-term effect. And I think, I believe
it has long-term effect. It's not always
true.
Good.
It doesn't have long-term effect maybe on the positive behavior. But I think it's Inuit culture in Alaska and some of the indigenous people groups there that to yell and to lash out is considered childish behavior. And if you do it, you are way out of line as an adult.
It's childish
behavior. So you wouldn't do that to a child ever. So if a child is to scream and yell, the corrective adults have like flat face and are like, we don't do that here, and just watch
and
until
we don't respond to it.
Right. They don't respond to it. They don't engage with it. They wait until there's a little bit of a calmness, and then they have a dialogue about it and they follow up with the consequences. You stole this from the store. We go back to the store and make it right. And I think if we could model those consequences clearly, it would be really beneficial for
families. And learning how to deal with anger, because so often, so for instance, I have two children, and when one would hurt the other, it would make me angry to see my other child hurting at the hands of the other one. And so anger can be an appropriate response, is the anger what you want to function out of? And I think that's,
I liked also the mention in the official lesson guide about the value of humor. You know, that humor is a wonderful thing. It can diffuse tense situations, and actually can teach, sometimes can teach lessons that would be too heavy to teach in a straight up one. But I want, in the last few minutes we have here, I want to get to something you mentioned earlier, Brent, and that was the ending of Proverbs about the noble wife. And I don't know what reaction you have to that, both of you, but...
Yeah, I look at it in the context of Proverbs, the way the book begins. I've kind of become accustomed to seeing what we call chiasms in Hebrew, and that is the way something begins is usually the way it ends. We have parallel ideas, and the book begins very much with a wisdom being seen as the ideal wife. And that it is a seductress that is foolishness. But here, this ideal woman, yes, it says she's an ideal wife, but she does more than any human, I think, could do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's idealized. But if I think of wisdom as what I might have to help me make the wise choices, then I'll look at this passage and say, oh, wait, this is about what I would do if I were wise. I would be prepared for the winter. I would have food stored up. I would have clothing made. Mm-hmm. I would buy a field when the price was right. I would be aware of opportunities. That's how I view it.
Yeah, what I would like to get away from is this idea that this is the objective standard which wives need to achieve. And I've actually been at weddings, Jen, where this was read.
No.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness, no.
Well, and the big problem, Dave, then, is that men will use it as a club over their wives.
Yeah.
But it sets up an unrealistic expectation where a woman can work herself to death and not achieve it.
Absolutely.
And feel like a failure.
Yep.
And then the man looks at that and thinks, well, I got a crummy wife because she's not doing all those things.
While he sits at the gates
like
and does nothing.
Would you like to add a female voice to this, Jen?
I have often heard it, and in high school I was told that this is what you should be as a woman at a youth group I used to attend, and I read it and I was like, yeah, no, that's never going to happen. That's just never going to happen.
It was beyond my capability and
capacity.
Did that leave you feeling like you were a failure, though?
Yeah. No, because I realized that it was allegorical and that it's supposed to be something to achieve, but I think it's a team, right? Yeah. Because I couldn't do all of those things by myself, but if with a team of people and as a family we're aiming for that, absolutely, you could nail it. And with God's providence and his guidance and his ability to shape your life, absolutely. Yeah. So I think that you have to understand Scripture. You can't interpret all of Scripture literally.
Yeah.
If you do, this woman never has fun. She never sits down to enjoy a meal. She never sleeps.
No.
She doesn't take a shower. Like, she never does
she wouldn't
things
be healthy.
That would keep her healthy.
Yep.
Right. She would be mentally unstable and in a psych ward really quickly.
But there's a lot more difficulty with interpreting Scripture literally. Like, why do you still have a hand and an eye, for example?
Exactly. So I think that realizing that this is what could be the guiding principles for my life.
And I don't think anybody here would suggest that we have low ideals.
No.
No, the high ideals, but realize that high ideals are just that. They're ideals we strive for, and that if you have worked diligently to achieve them and you fail, you ought not to beat yourself to death over it. So, hey, thank you very much for your participation today, Jen and Brent. And my thanks to Brad Williams, our engineer. As we conclude here, we look forward to more dialogue in the future. To those of you who listen, we thank you for Good Word. I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.